response.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
This program is paid for by the Labor and Energy Alliance. All opinions or statements expressed on the program are solely those of Labor and Energy Alliance or their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
Consider a career with the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers. As a Boilermaker apprentice, you'll earn while you learn. We offer excellent wages and benefits. And as part of our no-cost, hands-on apprenticeship program, you'll learn from the best in state-of-the-art training centers and on the job. Become a union Boilermaker and get on your way to a great career.
Visit Boilermakers.org or call 844-IBB-WELD.
And guess where this additional billion gallons of biofuel is going to come from? It's going to come from abroad. That's not an American First energy policy. We're in this together. Labor's in this. Building trades are in this. Refiners are in this. American consumers need us to do this too.
Now across the Jacob Media Network, welcome to the Labor and Energy Show special, exclusively presented by the PBF Energy Paulsboro Refinery and the PBF Delaware City Refinery, in collaboration with the labor unions that build our communities.
If you fix this RINs issue, you're looking at a reduction of 25 to 30 cents a gallon.
This is the Labor and Energy Show, bringing labor leaders, national experts, and political influencers together to educate you about fancy terms like RINs and RGGI, while explaining the truth about energy independence. Welcome to the Labor and Energy Show with J-Doc and Krause.
And welcome in, everyone, to another edition of the Labor and Energy Show with J-Doc and Krause. We are loaded today, J-Doc, with what will be a very, very special 60-minute broadcast. Four different guests will join us on this edition of the Labor and Energy Show.
Today, as you know, our educational broadcast series is such an important part of our mission and educating the public, okay, on what's going on in our traditional energy industries as well as our labor community. And so today, we'll feature a discussion on the growing demand of and opportunities for natural gas and liquefied natural gas, LNG. And so we got an awesome panel, like you mentioned, Jim Welty, President, Marcellus Shale Coalition, Todd Schnitzler, President, Electric Power Supply Association, Jim Snell, Business Manager, Steamfitters Local 420, who's also a member of the LNG Task Force, and PA State Representative Martina White, who serves PA's 170th Legislative District and is the chair of the LNG Task Force. And so lots to talk about, when it comes to our natural gas industry and community and all the resources that we have here in Pennsylvania that not only, impact what our energy here in Pennsylvania, but in the region, nationally and internationally. And so it's going to be a fantastic show.
We'll begin after the break. J-Doc and Jim Welty will get the show kicked off on the other side of the break. I do want to remind all of our listeners tuning in here across the Jacob Network, and of course, you can go to Apple or Spotify, search the Labor and Energy Show, and you can download an ever-growing catalog of content that continues to be consumed. We serve the purpose of education, J-Doc. That's why the show was created. Today certainly is an exclamation point on educating the public. You're going to cover a lot of ground today.
Absolutely, Joe. Couldn't be more excited. By the way, these are the things that the public may not know, but they should know. It should be common sense because these things impact our everyday lives. And typically, they only hear one side of the story. Natural gas, such an important part of our energy in America and clean energy. Okay, so natural gas is such, it's been one of the main reasons why we've lowered emissions in America and across the world. And so that and what a great power source it is. It's such a big thing, and we can't wait to educate the public further. So at that dinner table discussion, when they hear the terms drill, baby, drill, they understand what it's about.
This is the Labor and Energy Show with J-Doc and Krause. We'll get started after the break. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Labor and Energy Show, proudly presented by PBF Energy, also EQT Corporation, American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers, and Monroe Energy.
This program is paid for by the Labor and Energy Alliance. Today's program has been pre-recorded. Portions of tonight's Labor and Energy special are presented by PBF Energy and supported by members of the labor union community, a collaborative to educate the public and change the narrative.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Jacob Media Network. I'm ecstatic to bring into the program on the Labor and Energy Show, Jim Welty, President, Marcella Shell Coalition. Jim, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Joe. I am so happy to be here and glad to see you again.
And likewise, sir, and I appreciate you putting this panel together. It's such an important panel, and it's such an important topic. Like I said in the opening with Krause, this is a discussion on the growing demand of and opportunities of natural gas and LNG. Okay, but I also introduced you as the president of Marcellus Shale Coalition. For those who may not know, what is the mission of the Marcellus Shale Coalition, and what's your role, as the president?
Yeah, and thanks for asking the question. And Joe, what you and Joe Krause do on a daily basis, we greatly appreciate it. And we value our partner with the building trade so incredibly much and just like to have this platform and appreciate you giving us this opportunity. So, I've been on the program before, but I want to talk about the Marcellus Shale Coalition. We are the statewide trade association that represents the natural gas development going on here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. So our members make up the upstream developers, those that are producing the gas, drilling for the gas, the midstream companies that are processing and transporting the gas, as well as some of those downstream users like the electric power generation, some of the manufacturing community that are using the gas in mass. We also represent a lot of the services supply chain and building trades that support those operators doing business in the Marcellus and Utica shale seams here in Pennsylvania. So that's kind of the overview. My role is to really to continue to advocate for the continued production of natural gas and developing markets here in Pennsylvania and in the region. And that's what today's show is about. How can we better take advantage of the opportunities that are presented to us, both on the power gen side as well as the LNG liquefied natural gas side?
And so if you could give us and our listeners a snapshot of where the Marcellus and Utica region stand today in terms of production and economic impact.
Yeah. So this industry has really taken off in just the last 10 to 15 years. And it was really brought by the onset of being able to take a drill bit horizontally down into the ground and then turning or vertically down into the ground and turning it horizontally into very narrow shale seams that are anywhere between a mile, mile and a half to 2 miles below our feet. And those drilling operators can really drive that drill about 3 miles out horizontally. And they could put that drill right through a window of a bus if they need to. That's how specific and accurate they can be. But then that's all designed to pull the gas out. So we drill down, we pull the gas out. And right now we produce about 7.4 trillion cubic feet of gas a year out of Pennsylvania. Now, that's a big number, but let's put that into perspective. That's enough gas to heat about 115 million homes for an entire year. So we are the second largest natural gas producer in the country, second only behind Texas. And if you look at the Appalachian Basin, which comprises of West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, we would be the third largest natural gas resource in the world, second only behind Russia and the U.S. as a whole. So a lot of opportunity here on the natural gas and what it's producing. But more importantly, we support about 120,000 jobs here in Pennsylvania with an average wage of almost $100,000 a year. So we employ everything from GED to PhD and everything in between. And that's why our relationship with the building trades is so important.
And when you talk about natural gas, okay, and I mentioned it, when you talked at the opening about the role natural gas is played in lowering emissions across the world, okay? And the progress that has been made in those areas, okay? Talk about that and the efficiency when we talk about our natural gas resources.
Yeah, so we've seen a shift in electric power generation here in Pennsylvania significantly since the onset of the Marcellus development. That shift has gone from Pennsylvania's portfolio in electric gen being from 5% generated by natural gas to today it's 60% being generated for natural gas. Most of that replaced coal generation, but in a result of that is what you were talking about, and that is significant environmental benefits. So we've seen carbon dioxide emissions fall 47% in that same time frame that we've seen natural gas generation grow. Similarly, there are pollutants that cause asthma, such as NOx and SOx. They've declined 93 and 98% respectively. And quite frankly, when you add all those emission reductions together, that's basically like taking 12 and a half million cars off the road. And that's all the cars in Pennsylvania and about seven of our surrounding states. So the environmental benefits have been tremendous. And those translate into health benefits of upwards of $1 trillion in health benefits.
And so today's show, okay, and by the way, educating the public is what it's all about, okay? And those facts alone are incredible eye-openers, okay? And so we have a special show today. And we're talking about the discussion on growing the demand and for opportunities for natural gas and LNG, and we got some great people on it. So in layman's terms, so people understand, okay, this is where the rubber hits the road. Tell us a little bit about our guests, who they'll be on the show, and about the things that they're going to talk about.
Yeah, and look. This is all about a rising tide lifts all boats, right, Joe? It's as natural gas production grows, we have a lot of opportunity to create jobs on those downstream markets. And two of those big areas are electric power generation that I just touched on, and the need for continuing electricity. And that's what Todd Snitchell is going to talk to. Todd's the president of the Electric Power Supply Association. And he's got a keen awareness of what the needs are in terms of our electric generation grid, what's needed, what's driving that. So we're going to talk about that. In addition to that, something very near and dear to the heart of Jim Snell, business manager of the Steam Fitters there in Philadelphia, and State Representative Martina White, is the need for LNG export facility in the Pennsylvania area, particularly in the Philadelphia area. So Martina chaired the Philadelphia LNG task force. Jim Snell was part of that task force. Really, the growth in LNG and the need for LNG from our allies abroad really has been driving the need for more export facilities. And there are a number of planned facilities in the Gulf Coast. There's 15 of them that are planned, two of them under construction, three that have been approved. But we want one of those here in Pennsylvania. Why? Because of the easy access that we have to gas. So we're here to talk about those downstream opportunities for the utilization of gas, which at the end of the day creates jobs and economic prosperity for the regions.
No question about it. The last time we had the representative on the program, we were talking about PA House Bill 2458, which would put together the task force, okay, and explore, the entire situation, okay? And we're, one of the things we're going to talk about the state representative about and Jim Snell are the progress that we've made, that has been made since we had last talked. I think that was back in 2022. So the beautiful thing about it is we get the opportunity to kind of surround the entire issue and see, you mentioned, our allies, okay? And funny, in Pennsylvania and the Philadelphia port, where we're strategically located and how it can benefit, like I said at the beginning of the show, not just locally when we're talking about LNG, not just locally and regionally, but this is a big deal, okay, in supporting our allies overseas who are in a lot of ways you know, under siege and you know, at the mercy of individuals and company and countries that are not our friends. Okay, so that's such a huge, huge situation. Where in that process, in that political process here, what is the Marcellus Shale's coalition's role in that understanding and educating the powers that be, and of course, you know the groups that would say that they don't want that in Philadelphia.
Yeah, look, Joe, the United States has become the number one exporter of liquefied natural gas in the world. And one of the reasons for that is the desperate need for energy all across the globe. And because we sit on such great resources here in Pennsylvania and in the United States as a whole, we have that ability to provide that energy globally. What once was the number one destination being the Asian continent in Southeast Asia for LNG quickly became Europe being the number one market for U.S. LNG exports. Big reason for that is not to dance around it was the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the need that Europe had to rely on in terms of Russian natural gas to fuel their power needs. That all changed when Russia invaded Ukraine and created these opportunities. So now the number one export destination is Europe. And most of the countries in the top 10 that are receiving U.S. LNG are in Europe. So the proximity of Philadelphia to our allies in Europe, it makes a lot of sense to locate another facility here. It's a lot more economical. It's closer to the resource. It's also closer to the destination. So the economic impacts are going to be significant if we're able to make this happen. And I know we've got a keen focus on that moving forward.
Fantastic. We're ecstatic to bring into the program Todd Schnitzler, President, Electric Power Supply Association. How are you, sir? Welcome to the broadcast.
Great, Joe. Thanks for having me this morning.
It is absolutely our pleasure. And having said that, I mean, this is a great opportunity for us to explore the intersection of natural gas power generation, grid reliability, and energy policy. Can you give our listeners an overview of the EPSA's mission and your role as president?
Sure, Joe. Thanks again for the opportunity to do so. EPSA is the Electric Power Supply Association, and we're the only national trade association that represents wholesale competitive power producers here in Washington. And so our members own all types of assets in every part of the country where there are restructured markets. So California, Texas, New England, New York, the Mid-Atlantic states, even some in the Midwest, in the upper Midwest in particular, we have members that own coal, nuclear, natural gas is the predominant fuel of our members' resources, but also renewables and battery storage. So our members own and operate resources of all types in all parts of the country. And we're a little different than, you know, the traditional vertically integrated utility in that our members are, we kind of jokingly call them frenemies, and that they compete against each other because the lowest cost resource is the one that gets called on to run. And they're the ones that provide power when the market needs it. So if you're very expensive and you're inefficient, you don't get called very often. And so our members all compete against each other, but we all aim to try and deliver reliable, cost-effective, and ever cleaner power to the system. And so we've done that. I was really enjoying the conversation you and Jim were having a minute ago about the amount of emissions reductions. In fact, the Mid-Atlantic portion of the country leads the country in emissions reductions since 2005, and it's not even close. And that's predominantly due to the utilization of Utica and Marcellus natural gas from the Appalachian Basin. And I think that's a great story that sometimes gets overlooked.
And you know, having said that, my next question touches on those. How would you describe the current state of power generation in the U.S. and where does natural gas fit into that landscape?
Yeah, that's the question that's on everybody's lips these days. We are experiencing for the first time in probably 30 years meaningful load growth on the system, meaning that Americans are utilizing and needing more power than they have in the past. In the 70s and 80s, we had a excess amount of supply that was built into the system. And as efficiency and demand response, which is a way of reducing your amount of consumption, was added to the system over the last 15 or 20 years, we've been pretty flat, almost to declining, depending on where you were in the country. And then, of course, in the last 18 months or so, everyone's favorite word is data center. And we talk about those a lot because they are part of the reason that we're seeing an increase in demand, but they're not the only reason that we're seeing increase in demand. We're also seeing it by reshoring of manufacturing, where there's additional energy use that's needed, as well as electrification of homes and businesses in various parts of the country. All three of those taken in combination have resulted in, I guess all the reports say up. Now, if you could tell me which number's the right number, we'd probably be doing something else and retired on an island somewhere. But what we know is that demand growth is coming, and it's going to be in a meaningful fashion, which means we're going to need additional resources, and that means new generating resources. It also means we're going to keep what we have on the system now, because if we take things off the system and we don't have sufficient resources to both replace and add to that, then you jeopardize reliability. And jeopardizing reliability is not an option. Those are table stakes. The system has to remain reliable. As I tell everybody, there's three things that customers want: lights on, beer cold, water warm. And they don't want to pay much for it. And that's all in the eye of the beholder. But those three things are really non-negotiable. And I think what is becoming more and more apparent as we see the evolution of the data center proposition and reshoring of manufacturing is that natural gas is both critically important now, and it's going to be important for decades to come. There was a narrative for a while that suggested natural gas was a bridge fuel, and that was a pretty short bridge in some people's estimation. I think the facts on the ground would reflect that that bridge has gotten a whole lot longer, and that we're going to need a lot of natural gas, and we're going to need it for a long time to come in order to power the American economy. And really, this is a national security related issue, and it's a mom and pop issue at the kitchen table, because they want to make sure that they can have reliable power. They want to be sure that they can afford it. And natural gas is going to be critical to deliver both of those things.
Jim, you want to jump in?
Yeah, let me jump in. And Todd, that's a really great overview. And it's something that we've seen. Can you talk specifically to the PJM grid, which is under which Pennsylvania operates, and their projections for the need for demand, what that looks like, and how natural gas can be seen as helping to meet that growing need here in the PJM grid?
Yeah, PJM is kind of leading the way in many ways with regard to demand growth, because data centers, first in Virginia, but now it's outside of Virginia. It's happening in Pennsylvania. It's happening in Ohio and other parts of their footprint. They are seeing a fairly significant amount of load growth that's coming. And I wouldn't call it a vertical line, but it's a pretty steady increase. And I think their most recent analysis suggested that they were going to add tens of gigawatts, that's thousands of megawatts of new load between even now and 2030, which, much like the oil and gas world, 5 years is yesterday in the power generation world. And so the importance of getting new resources both in the system and on and operating is critically important, because PJM has an obligation to make sure that the system remains reliable. They're the ones that dispatch all that power. And the fact that they happen to be sitting on three of the states that are some of the largest natural gas producers in the country has made it an easier approach for them to try and deal with the issues of cost implications. Because as I noted, our members are competitors. We don't get paid a fixed rate. We have to compete and be least cost in order to operate. And that's how our members profit from their operations. And PJM is trying to figure out how they can dispatch the least cost resources across the system while still integrating state policies into some of those issues, which has made it a little more difficult than it used to be. Way back in the day when I was a commissioner at the Ohio Public Utilities Commission, everybody was concerned about least cost dispatch, and all 13 states in the District of Columbia agreed on that, and that made PJM's job a little easier. Well, now we've got states with different policies and different choices and different timelines on emissions reductions and preferred resources. And so the RTO, which is the Regional Transmission Organization, or PJM, has had to try to navigate accounting for those state peculiarities, as well as ensuring the system is reliable and doing so in a way that remains cost effective. And they've done a pretty good job of that. It's not to say that there aren't issues that they're working on, because clearly there are. But I think they have recognized and they see the value of natural gas as a part of the system. Over the last 20 years, you've seen the system really retire a lot of the old higher emitting coal units that were really at the end of their useful life. The economics said it's time to retire. And they've been replaced predominantly by combined cycle natural gas units that continue to be kind of the bread and butter, along with the nuclear fleet, to power the PJM grid. And so, yes, there's other pieces and parts. Yes, there are other technologies that are deployed, and they're growing at a slower rate. But the things that are keeping the lights on right now are really the remaining coal fleet, the significant amount of natural gas that powers the system, as well as the nuclear fleet that is in Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Illinois predominantly, but also New Jersey, I guess, as well.
Yeah, that's helpful. And let me ask this, too. I know you recently had a discussion with Chairman Steve DeFrank of the Yes. Pennsylvania PUC. How would you characterize his view of the world in terms of what Pennsylvania needs to be doing to ensure that reliability and that affordability? And where does natural gas play in that role from his perspective?
Yeah, I would never speak for the chairman, but I'll try and reflect his views accurately from the conversation that we had. But Chairman DeFrank really said a couple of things. One, he said natural gas is going to have a long life in Pennsylvania. And you look at what Pennsylvania is trying to do when it comes to getting new businesses to locate there to become a data center home, as well as, you know, what we see in other parts of the PJM footprint like Virginia. Homer City is a great example. I mean, it's a former coal plant that's going to be the largest natural gas-fired facility in North America when it's completed. It's going to have more than 4,000 megawatts of gas-fired generation right there. It's custom-tailored to try and be responsive to the increase in demand from data centers and other opportunities from economic growth in Pennsylvania. So I know the chairman is, of course, supportive of that. And the commission is also taking a look, as I know a number of state commissions are, about what are the potential cost implications for delivering this reliable system. Because, yes, there's a generation component, and customers aren't required to pay a non-bypassable charge or that fee that would be associated with your bill every month for the next 30 years like a traditional utility is. But there is transmission and distribution infrastructure that's going to be required in order to connect some of those resources and ensure that the electrons can get from where they're being generated to where the customers are going to need them. And so I know Pennsylvania is, along with other states, is looking at how do we mitigate some of those costs, but how do we deliver the solutions faster? Because we're really in a race against the clock, and it's vitally important to move quickly on getting things constructed and connected, because that's going to be kind of the building blocks to ensuring long-term viability and success of the system.
You know, I wonder, you know, we talk about, you know, these situations. I wonder if the general public really understands what's powering the grid that's heating their homes, okay, air conditioning, okay. You want to see panic in Philadelphia on a Sunday afternoon, have the grid go down in the fall, okay, and the reliability factor, okay. And so when you talk about the grid, how realistic is it, okay, to maintain a reliable grid with the current pace of coal and nuclear retirements if natural gas isn't expanded or supported?
Joe, I think you raised the right question, which is how do we ensure that we have that near 100% reliability? And the grid does an excellent job of doing that today. But I think there is a growing recognition amongst state and federal regulators that we've got to make sure that the appropriate resources are around to power the system so that we don't jeopardize that critical reliability. You know, going back to my time as the chair of the Public Utilities Commission in Ohio, you know, it used to be the rule of thumb was, well, you had about 72 hours. If the power went out, the public would understand and they could kind of muddle through and they'd be able to get from here to when the lights were reconnected. Well, that time horizon has shrunk to about 24 hours. And to your point, if you're in an urban setting like Philadelphia, New York, Boston, it's about 8 hours. And so the criticality of ensuring system reliability couldn't be higher. We're more and more reliant on the electric system now for our phones and our internet and our everything in your house that has now been electrified that maybe wasn't in the past. We're more and more dependent on it, and we're less and less aware of it because you hit that light switch and you know what? More than 999 times out of 1,000, that light comes on and you never think about it. And so that's where we are as the public's recognition that the system always works. And it's our job, along with the wires utilities that move the electrons from where we generate them all the way to the customer, to make sure that all of that thing behind that light switch works when it's supposed to and as reliably as it can possibly be done.
One of the areas I know that we're completely aligned, Todd, is the need for infrastructure.
Oh, yeah.
Both the infrastructure to get the gas to the power generators, but also to get the electricity out to market. And that is a growing need, particularly within the power, the PJM grid here. And it's something that we're keenly aware of and keenly focused on. And what can you talk to that?
Yeah, that's one of the things that we're dealing with here in Washington, which is permitting and siting reform. It's kind of the thing everybody likes to talk about, but we're struggling to get to the finish line. I'm also a recovering politician, so I kind of chuckle a little bit because the deal seems pretty obvious. You got to give something to the wires and you got to give something to the pipes, because we're going to need both in order for the system to function. And frankly, that's great for labor, because you win on both sides of the equation, right? You're going to help us do both of those things. And so that's the deal, I think, that has to be made. I know that there is discussion around taking up permitting and siting again in the fall. Senator Manchin and Senator Barrasso had gotten a pretty long way down the field with their permitting and siting reform bill in the last Congress. Our hope is that they start from that finished line and then move towards, you know, what parties can agree on and not start over from scratch and take longer than is necessary. But I think the very keen awareness that policymakers have about the importance of getting these resources both developed, approved, and then constructed is more and more apparent every day. And so I think the ability for us to argue about things because it's useful for campaigning is maybe behind us, and now we're in the solutions phase of things. And I think that's good for everybody in this conversation, but it's also good for Bob and Betty Buckeye, as we used to say back in Ohio.
So we only have a couple minutes left, and I'd like to talk about when you look at private investment, are you seeing new or upgraded natural gas plants, and in the future?
Without question, Joe. I think PJM, to come back to their important issues about getting sufficient resources online, they just went through a program called the RRI, or the Resource, I forget what it is now, Reliability Resource Initiative. Yeah, they had to do a request to have applications come in order to make sure that they could get as much added to the system as they possibly could quickly. They had about 95 projects get submitted into the queue. They selected 50 or 51 of them, predominantly natural gas-fired uprates and new resources to the system. And so I think that recognizes a couple of things, one of which is if you can uprate existing resources, whether it's natural gas or other technology, that's the quickest way for us to bridge the short-term issues that we're dealing with. But then I think people are seeing the validity of the investment thesis around natural gas-fired resources going forward. The challenge that everybody deals with, whether you're a traditional vertically integrated utility or you're a competitive power supplier or a rural co-op, is we have supply chain issues around getting turbines. The cost of those turbines is not going down. It's going the other direction because demand is up. So we're going to need to see more of those, whether it's GE or Siemens or Mitsubishi, whoever you're sourcing your equipment from. Those things are going to be vitally important. But I think you're seeing a clear recognition and investment flowing into those technologies, because people see that they have a longer term value than just the next 3 or 4 years. It's probably the next 3 or 4 decades that we're going to see those resources have to operate to power the system.
Okay, so let's spit fire as we roll out. But how are power producers preparing to invest in carbon reduction technologies like carbon capture, obviously while still relying on natural gas?
Yeah, great question. Actually, we have a couple of members of EPSA that are leading in the deployment of carbon capture test beds and projects around the country in order to figure out how to best commercialize that technology and then deploy it onto a natural gas-fired system. It's been tested in the past on coal-fired systems. And I'm a lawyer, not an engineer. Those are altogether different engineering questions than the gas side of things. But they're spending millions and millions of dollars to try and figure out the science behind how you operate economically and use carbon capture technology in order to extend the viability of those systems. And I think that you're going to see some groundbreaking technologies be developed over the next 5 to 10 years that are going to enable an even longer time horizon for those types of resources than we have today. And I think that all counts to the good for the future of natural gas, both from the production as well as the consumption and utilization for power generation.
Jim, if you would, we only have a minute left. Close us out, and obviously, I can't tell you, Todd, how much we appreciate you being on the broadcast.
Yeah, I'll just reiterate what Joe just said, Todd. Really appreciate you being on and kind of painting the picture of the need for power generation growth, and in particular as it relates to natural gas and the opportunities that present there. You know, you mentioned just on the data center side, Homer City, that's going to be building a facility with 10,000 jobs on site that are all going to be building trades. We can duplicate that in other places, particularly in the southeast and northeast of Pennsylvania. So the opportunities are tremendous. Appreciate you being on, appreciate your insights, and looking forward to continuing our partnership.
Thanks very much. Appreciate the opportunity.
Todd Snitzer, President, Electric Power Supply Association, has been our guest in the third segment of the broadcast. Todd, once again, thanks so much. We're going to have more from the Labor and Energy Show in just a minute.
This program is paid for by the Labor and Energy Alliance. Today's program has been pre-recorded. Portions of tonight's Labor and Energy Special are being supported by the members of the labor union community, including Steamfitters Local 420, Jim Snell, Business Manager, the Eastern Atlantic States Regional Council of Carpenters, and the United Steelworkers.
All right, welcome back to the Labor and Energy Show on the Jacob Media Network. Again, I want to thank Todd Snitzer for being on the program. Ecstatic, Jim Welting, to have our next two guests on the program. Certainly, Jim Snell, Business Manager, Steamfitters Local 420, is no stranger to the broadcast. Jimmy, welcome to the show.
Hey, J-Doc. Thanks for having us. And it's great to be a part of this illustrious panel, for sure.
Fantastic. And likewise, and certainly Pennsylvania State Rep Martina White, who's also no stranger to the broadcast. Representative, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you so much. I'm really looking forward to the conversation, guys. Appreciate being on.
Well, we're mostly going to be talking about Eagles football, so you're going to love this particular. Just kidding, that's a difference. Having said that, you know, obviously, the last time, Representative, like we mentioned at the beginning of the show, you were on the broadcast. We talked about a PA House Bill 2458, you know, which was, if it was approved, obviously, and signed by the governor, would create a task force to study how to establish a liquid natural gas export terminal in Philadelphia. Okay, and we've had this conversation a number of times over the years. And Jimmy Snell, obviously, we've also talked about this this topic, you know, many times. And so, having said that, you know, Representative White, if you you're the chair of the force, can you start by kind of explaining why this task force was, and remind listeners, was formed, and what it was tasked with accomplishing?
Sure. So this LNG export task force was implemented through the statute that you referenced earlier. It was something that was bipartisan, and it passed bipartisanly out in Harrisburg under the Wolf administration. And the purpose of it was really to put together a bicameral and bipartisan task force that could evaluate whether or not it was even feasible to put an LNG export facility in the Southeast region along our Delaware River. And ultimately, what would the ramifications of that be, right? Like, what would the benefits or the pros and cons of doing such a thing be? And ultimately, what we determined that it is feasible. You know, the Coast Guard said it would be something that they can handle. It would be safe. You know, they established in the task force that there would be a multi-billion-dollar economic benefit to the Commonwealth, and there'd be tens of thousands of jobs if we were to put an LNG export facility into place. And ultimately, what we just heard from all of these other guests that you had on your show is that we have demand here in Pennsylvania and across the country, as well as globally, for this LNG that we have right here in Pennsylvania under our feet. And it's some of the cleanest gas that you will find in the world. So we need to be taking advantage of what we have right here. And I'm so tired. You know, you talk about the Eagles. You know, I'm so tired of hearing about my Pittsburgh colleagues in Harrisburg talking about all this energy production, all these jobs and all these, you know, benefits of what they have out there in the Homer City plant going in. I want to see the Southeast region benefiting from this resource. We have the workforce, we have the trades, we have the, you know, blue collar working class people that are willing to get out there and do the these, you know, incredible jobs. And good paying, like, why can't we just go and get this done? And so I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about some of those areas that we faced over, you know, over these past couple of years in terms of things that have been preventing us from getting to that point. But we're certainly on the right path now. And I'm looking forward to discussing it.
Yeah, we've talked and with Jim Welty and I, we're discussing. Yeah, and you mentioned obviously the economic impact it would have on our region, okay. But also, like Jim had said, Jim Welty, we're located so perfectly that to be able to have you know, obviously local and regional, but also national and even international impact, you know, with our, you know, with the Philly location. Talk about that and kind of the magnitude of, because we're going to, Jimmy Snell, we're going to talk about, you know, also Jim, if he'll jump in, but we're also going to talk about the job impact. But if you would, Representative, talk about the international impact, if we can make this happen.
Yeah. So, you know, we heard earlier about all of the facilities that are being built down in the Gulf. But the reality is that Europe, our European allies, and we saw with the war in Ukraine and Russia, what's happening and the concerns that they had about their access to power, to energy, right, to their gas pipeline. And so for us here in America, we have a huge opportunity to be able to provide our allies abroad with LNG. It's cleaner. It's going to be able to get to them faster than what they can be provided down from the Gulf. And I think it's a huge advantage for this region to be able to do that. And it's an advantage for American national security. It's an advantage for our allies abroad. And it's something that we need to really implement as soon as possible. And there are people from other countries who have been reaching out directly to me who have companies that are interested in our region and investing in projects like the LNG export site. So we need to basically capitalize on this and move forward as quickly as possible, not only to ensure our own national security, but also those of our allies abroad. And I think that that's going to be key for sure, of getting support from, you know, our federal colleagues and obviously our state leadership as well.
And that's a huge deal. Like, we talk about energy security in America, right? But also protecting our allies, okay? And so the impact is, you know, in a sense, unprecedented. Jimmy Snell, if you will, you know, jump in and talk about your role on the task force, okay? And representing, obviously, the interests of not only Steamfitters Local 420, but all of our building trades and you know, and beyond, because of the amount of jobs that can also, you know, be procured.
Sure, Joe. And to echo Madam Chair's sentiments, I'm very happy, you know, my counterparts out in Western PA. I'm happy about Homer City and, you know, the possibilities. Wow, it's exciting for them. And just recently, this past week, I was talking to quite a few of them, and they're really pumped up about it, right? It's all about jobs. Like Jim Welty said, it's somewhere in the range of 10,000 jobs. Okay. I'm happy for them. But I'm the jobs guy. I'm also jealous, you know? I want to see something like that in the Southeast. And to be honest with you, you know, I had my doubts, you know, up until recently. It seemed to kind of pick up steam again. And it, you know, like the representative said, not only would this create jobs, okay, for the building trades and jobs for the mom and pop, you know, the hoagie shop, the pizza shop in the region, and the tax revenue for the towns, you know, along the Delaware River and the county. So the revenue stream, I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, I heard it would be somewhere in the neighborhood of $30 to $35 million. I've heard them projections are even higher now. So, but putting that aside, like Jim Weldy and Madam Chair mentioned, you know, it's a matter of national security. It's a matter of, you know, Pennsylvania could be at the forefront of, you know, helping our allies, especially, you know, in the Ukraine. And, you know, the last time we kind of had this forum, Joe, a couple of years ago, you know, I guess everybody, you know, at some point we were all praying, hoping and praying that things would get better, you know, in the Ukraine and in Europe as a whole. Right. But just as recent as, you know, the last couple of days, it seems like it's only getting worse. So, you know, the need for energy is so clear, you know, not just in the United States, but, you know, throughout the world, most especially Europe. And, you know, like what was touched on, you know, you build an LNG facility along probably the most strategic port up and down the East Coast, the Delaware River. It gets to Europe that much quicker, 2-3 days or so quicker as compared to the Gulf, you know, the LNG facilities down there.
Jim Wells, can I jump in there?
Yeah, and you know, I think we appreciate both of your leadership on this. And Martina, nobody's been more outspoken in the General Assembly than you, and the opportunities that are presented for the Philadelphia region. You know, there's a reason that your peers elected you as chair of their caucus. And, you know, Jim, same to you. You've been a really good vocal advocate for seeing this development occur and wanting this development to occur in Philadelphia. And I think one of the concerns that has been out there has been that, well, what would that mean to the impact on the cost of energy to here at home? And the studies have shown, the legitimate studies have shown, that there's going to be no impact. We've got enough gas under our feet here to not just fuel our needs and meet the needs of consumers here, but also meet the needs of our allies, as you so pointed out. And we've got the building trades to be able to build the facility, to operate the facility. But I want to talk a little bit, too, about kind of the tertiary benefit to that. There may be an opportunity to build ships. Right. We are in desperate need of LNG tankers. And, you know, there's a facility there in Philadelphia, and there could be an opportunity there to build a U.S. flag tanker to ship that LNG. Can you talk a little bit about that, Jim?
Sure. You know, not speaking for the developer, but I do know that there's definitely been talks of pairing an LNG facility, you know, in the region, along with also building a LNG tanker. You know, it makes just great sense, right? You're right down the river, the Philadelphia Naval Yard, right? And you see things starting to percolate more and more down there at the shipyard, building the workforce down there, building ships. And I think the focus, like you said, is the current administration, federal administration, wants to build more of these LNG tankers, which is fabulous for the unionized workforce down at the shipyard. So, we're touching on so many things, right? But in my world, right, the jobs portion, something like this would just be such a game changer. What do I mean? So, you know, if the Philadelphia Building Trades knows, you know, that we have big projects coming along, we're able, all the different trades, myself included, we're able to bring in more and more apprentices, young men and women. And you know, I dream of tripling the size, in all honesty, of my apprenticeship. And I really think, you know, we're getting close to that point. And as many of us know, right, in the unionized building trades, Philadelphia building trades, you know, these aren't jobs. These are careers. OK. And we have done, I honestly believe it's never good enough, but we've done a great job at promoting ourselves within the middle schools in the region. That's right, middle schools and high schools and different other venues for young men and women. And look, as we all know, college isn't for everybody. You know, nothing against those college students, but, you know, the opportunity to come into the trades and start your career as an apprentice is a fabulous thing. It's you're able to raise a family, buy a house, you know, and you have that job security. And if something like this project, you know, this LNG project was able to you know, kick off, I mean, you're looking at thousands of jobs. And the one thing that people aren't being made aware of too much, the possibility of this LNG, it would be the cleanest, greenest LNG in the world as it's being promoted. So, you know, you to your point, Jim and Madam Chair, natural gas, you know, cleaning the world, you know, the carbon emission has gone down so much because of the natural gas. You're absolutely right. And to even go a step further, you know, this possible LNG plant would be electric driven, you know. So, and the other cool thing is, you know, in our region, we already have the infrastructure in place. Okay, so it's not like there'd be miles and miles of pipelines leading to this. The infrastructure's already in place. So that's a key thing in this whole discussion.
You know, having said that, you mentioned the apprentice programs, and you and I have done, and you know, we've all talked about the education and the aptitude of, you know, some people. It's such a great opportunity to earn while you learn. But one question before we just real quick, the technologies, okay, you know, to do this type of work, are we you know, upgrading our apprentice programs to make sure that all these new technologies that are coming into the market, that our apprentices and our journeymen and women are trained?
Yeah, Joe. So, you know, when we talk about this region, naturally, we talk about the Philadelphia building trades. And I'm here to tell you, right, it's the most productive, most safe building trades in the entire country. And you know, you'll laugh. You'll say, well, of course you're going to say that, Jim. You know, but the reality is, you know, these are coming from people, groups like Energy Transfer, who, you know, who has a facility in Marcusuk, you know, astonished at the safety aspect of what we provide. In relation to technologies, that's something that Steamfitters Local 420 and the building trades are very proud of. We keep up with, you have to keep up with the technologies. Things are changing and improving almost monthly. You know, it really happens that quick. But, you know, in regards to safety, there's nobody that has better welders in the country than we do. And again, I'll go back to Energy Transfer when they had their large project, about 7-8 years ago down in Marcus Hook. They were really amazed at the weld rejection rate, which was like some astronomically low number. And they were really shocked at the productivity. So, and that's coming from a company that ventured into this region for the northeast part of the country for the first time. You know, they're predominantly, you know, from down south, and they really didn't know what to expect. And, you know, and these aren't my words. This is coming from Energy Transfer, you know.
And so... Oh, go ahead, Jim.
I was just going to say I was there for the signing of that PLA, and it was a great opportunity for both the trades and the company. I guess for Representative White, I just one question here, and that is, you know, you're seen as a leader within the General Assembly. What do you sense that your colleagues feel about an LNG facility, and what do we need to be doing as a community to encouraging it with your college and trying to push them in that direction?
Yeah, I would say that there has been much more, a higher level of support from both sides of the aisle for an LNG export facility. I can speak to, you know, State Representative Democrat colleague Steve Maligari. He's very interested in this. He's even worked with his friends, I guess. He's very big into the Greek community in terms of shipping LNG across the ocean here. I would say that the challenge is really just trying to get the proper permitting reforms and regulatory reforms to make it a more suitable commonwealth where these large companies who, you know, like the one out in Homer City, you know, are willing to make the investments, but we can get so many more interested parties engaged and the financing that goes behind these big projects, make those companies feel more at ease about making and putting their dollars behind projects here in Pennsylvania. They will know for a fact with a proper permitting reforms that they're going to be able to get a project through the process quickly and not have a lot of hiccups or uncertainty. If we can bring that kind of stability into the marketplace here, then I think that we can get very, very aggressive about these projects. And then also, I would say that the relationships that have come with U.S. Senator McCormick engaging on this issue, as well as, you know, the president and the administration trying to ensure that the policy got reversed when it in the prior administration, they banned LNG export licenses entirely from being issued. And now that has been freed up and now we can move forward to actually put a, you know, an application proposal into FERC and hopefully get it approved quickly for projects of this size. So, you know, those are the kinds of things that need to get addressed here in Pennsylvania. But at least I, you know, with me being at the lead and at the helm and trying to push these things forward and build out those relationships that are needed, I think that we are making progress. And, you know, Jim Snell is a great colleague and friend and person who is just very, very engaged on this issue. And so to have those types of individuals that are experienced and have the background to help support these initiatives, it's really critical. And I just appreciate that work. And the same for, well, I guess I said Jim, but Jim Snell, Jim Welty, you know, both of you guys, you know, you're doing great work. And it means a lot to us as legislators, because that's part of the process. And I know we're coming to, you know, the end of the program-ish, I guess, here, but to a break. But educating the public and educating legislators on this issue has been key, because that's how you garner the support. Once members hear about the energy crisis and the grid reliability issues and the opportunities that we have available to us to get this LNG export facility through, I think that we see a lot more support coming around from both sides of the aisle.
And so this has brought to the conclusion the fastest hour in radio. Okay, I mean, this is just flown by. Obviously, Jimmy Snell and Representative Martina White, I mean, can't thank these both enough, and Todd Schnitzler, but Jim Welty, you know, putting this together, phenomenal, the first of many. So if you will, sir, got about 20, 30 seconds, take us home and give us some final words.
Well, I definitely want to thank our participants today, Todd Schnitzler, Representative White, Jim Snell. Thank you for your partnership, for your advocacy, and for leading for natural gas in particular. We see that as the future. Looking forward to continuing the partnership with the building trades, because as I said earlier, rising tide lifts all boats. We can create these downstream opportunities to build LNG facilities, to build electric power generation, data centers. It means jobs. It means economic prosperity. And we appreciate it. And thank you, Joe, you and Joe Krause, for everything that you guys do.
Fantastic. Well, I want to thank everybody. Obviously, our guest, Representative Martina White, Jim Snell, and Todd Schnitzler, and of course, Jim Welty, for putting everything together. We're going to have one last quick segment. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the Labor and Energy Show. We'll be back in just a minute.
This edition of the Labor and Energy Show is proudly presented and sponsored by PBF Energy, Monroe Energy, National Mining Association, and the United Steelworkers. Go to Apple or Spotify and download this edition of the Labor and Energy Show, chock full of great information and great conversation. Jeduck, you have 20 seconds before we have to say goodbye.
Joe, I want to thank everybody, obviously, for being on the broadcast. It's an educational broadcast on our natural gas and our LNGs. And we have such a great team and great people here in the state of Pennsylvania, as you can very well see. Just proud to have been a part of this broadcast, and certainly looking forward, to bringing this project to a fruition. And of course, want to thank our listeners for tuning in.
That's going to do it for this edition of the Labor and Energy Show with Jaydock and Krause. See you next time, everyone.
This program is paid for by the Labor and Energy Alliance. All opinions or statements expressed on the program are solely those of Labor and Energy Alliance or their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
Hey, y'all. Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.